Hello, welcome to Young Valley Leaders, WDIY's newest monthly show featuring the upcoming movers and shakers in your backyard, making it happen for themselves and our community. I'm your host, Lewis Holzman, and today I'm here with Clarice Staupe.
Yeah, hi.
Hey. Thanks for having the time here today and joining us. Clarice, you hail from Bethlehem, currently living in Allentown, and really always a part of the fabric of the Lehigh Valley. So thank you for being you and for taking action here. But true to the heart of gold that you have, and we've been friends for some years, so I can candidly and honestly say that you spent your professional life really working with people who need it the most, helping get their lives on track through supporting their rights and fundamental needs, whether that's basic things like housing, citizenship, working papers, and so much more. You've done this through various nonprofits and social services, but most recently joined the Keg Algon Lifehouse. In addition to being a founding and acting executive director of MIRA, Migrants, Immigrants, Refugees, Asylees, a nonprofit that you founded a number of years ago, and we'll jump into that. So welcome, Clarice. Thank you for what you do, again, for all the thousands of people trying to find their way in our community.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and inviting me here.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, we're really going to dive right in right away here. And would love to learn a little bit more about what shaped you to go after or what made you decide to really help support, I'll call it, some of the marginalized communities here within the community in the Lehigh Valley at large, but also really within our urban cores. So can you speak to that a little bit?
So I think what started off was my mother had me volunteering from a very young age. So I started volunteering when I was about 8. And so that kind of got me into that realm of just wanting to genuinely help people. And then I ended up going to school, and my major is in social work. So I ended up kind of getting into that realm that way. And then I ended up working in the community through ESOL. So I was working with students that weren't from the area and seeing what they were struggling with.
Okay. And so working early on from a volunteer standpoint, went to school for social services, then coming out of that, what was that direction where, you know, there's so many different nonprofits and organizations that you could join or be a part of, but you decided to go out and do it on your own. So what is MIRA? What made you want to go out and make that happen for yourself? And, you know, what are you doing for the community and the people that, you know, come to you for those resources?
Yeah, so when I was teaching ESOL, I had a lot of students that their families were in need of resources as well. And there wasn't really anything directly made for them. And we already had access to all of those resources. And, you know, I didn't necessarily want to reinvent the wheel. So we made this organization that's really community-based. So working with different community organizations and really building this organization off of partnerships to be able to help this demographic and community directly with their specific needs.
And so 501c3, am I correct about that? Yeah, mm-hmm. So 501c3 for 5, 6, 7 years, or just nonprofit? You've been doing this for a number of years.
So MIRA has been around for roughly 4 years, a little over, but I've been working in nonprofits for just about 10 years.
Okay. And so with MIRA specifically, I mean, can you give us an example of what, like, a use case is? Like, what someone comes to you, A, how do they find you and get connected? But B, then, like, what are some of the things that you're able to do to help, you know, whether it's a migrant or someone that's trying to find a footing here, really in America, let alone the Valley? What does that look like, you know, working with you and your team?
So we really focus on their specific needs. The immigrant, migrant, refugee, their community is the resources are very limited for this population, this group, because a lot of them are undocumented. So really getting them connected to basic resources as far as like food, clothing, housing, medical care, and then going even further. So, you know, helping them look at different employment opportunities that they're available to get, what different benefits they're able to receive, and then going into that citizenship process along with them.
Hmm. Okay. And I mean, that sounds like a long process. Like, long it can be. And maybe not even very straightforward. Like, particularly for someone that probably isn't an English native or first language speaker, maybe even doesn't write themselves, like, are you, like, yourself doing all of that legwork to get them to the finish line? Like, you mentioned partners before. How does all those pieces come together to get to achieved end result?
Yeah. No, it's definitely not one person. The reason that we built it so community-based is because, again, I didn't want to reinvent that wheel. So just for example, if someone comes to us, and again, they're coming to us in different stages of what I had just mentioned. So sometimes they're ready for that citizenship process to start that. Sometimes they are just at the beginning and they literally just arrived to us last night. So it really depends at like what part of the process they're in. But again, like partnering with different organizations, that's always been one of the main thing that I have made a part of MIRA, because of there's just so many different organizations that already exist that have these resources, and they're just not in touch with that community. So we kind of bridge them together.
Okay.
To kind of serve as that middle person.
Interesting, interesting. And so you're really facilitating a lot of these conversations and connections and knowing where to point people.
Yeah.
In a rough sense of numbers, like how many people are you helping on like a monthly or yearly basis and to get to these things?
So I know last time we looked at numbers, we were looking at roughly, I'm going to have to think of math. We were looking at roughly serving, it was like adding up to be about like 10 people a day, I think it was.
10 people a day?
Yeah. So because of like all of our different services, so they could be coming to us just searching like for a food bank and it's quick and easy, or they could be coming to us and like searching for citizenship, or they could be attending one of like our English classes, trauma support groups. So really like depending on like what service they're seeking through us. Yeah, it was
to,
like
just to confirm and put that in some general rough annual numbers, we're talking like 3,600 people a year type of thing that's going through your nonprofit and you're connecting to different. Wow. And are those all like new people coming through all the time, or is there like repeat individuals that maybe use one service and then like need help on another service? And so there's like some overlap with.
There is some overlap due to just like the different resources that we have. So, for example, like the classes, that individual's reattending that class. There is also different folks that have just like, you know, the classes run all year round, and there are some different folks that have just retaken the class every single year just because they just want to continue getting that help. And also, it's not just people who are, again, just coming here and have arrived here yesterday. We do get that a lot, but it is some people who have been here for 10, 20 some years, and they're finally at that point where they're looking to get help.
Okay. Is there something that is common that pushes someone to go get that help, or is it like a, you know, wide use case?
The citizenship process is very, just getting papers, period, is just very expensive and a lengthy process. So when people just first come over, it's not the first thing that they're going to be looking at doing, because they're not able to afford it. They're coming over with nothing. They don't have connections when they come over, so they don't speak the language. Trying to find employment without papers, that's another hurdle. So it's really like looking at getting documented when someone comes over undocumented. It's not something they look at directly right away.
Okay. Wow, I'm just like taking in the size of that. I mean, I've known you for a while, but that's a lot of people. Is there a certain like demographic or maybe culture or place in the world that you see a lot of the individuals coming to you from, or is it really dispersed like throughout all different areas?
It depends on like what's going on. So in other areas, so for example, I think it was last year when things were going on in Ukraine, we had a big influx of people from Ukraine coming in. Right now, we have a big influx of people from Guatemala that are coming in. You know, a few years back, I think it was, I want to say 3-4 years ago, we saw a big influx of people from different, from Afghanistan coming in. And then before that, we had a big influx of people coming in from different parts of Africa. Hmm. So that doesn't necessarily mean that we don't still have people coming in from Afghanistan and Africa, but it's not like the large amounts. again, though, it depends on what's going on. So, for example, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So say, you know, war breaks out, just using as an example, in the Congo, in Africa, then probably in the next few months we're going to start receiving a lot of folks from Congo.
Okay. So that's pretty incredible. I mean, really, people coming from all corners of the earth, and you probably, how do you communicate with those that don't speak English? Like, how do they find you, but then also you continue to connect them with, you know, like, pointing resources? Like, they probably don't have smartphones or cell phones off the rip to, like, here's a website and go contact this lawyer. Like, that probably is not accessible for some of these people. So how do you handle that?
It depends. Some of them do have a phone, and so that makes it a little easier. Some of them don't, so we just, it's really kind of just a paper trail kind of thing. So just writing it down for them, and that's a thing. A lot of them are a lot more resilient than we would think. And I mean, really looking at all that they've been through, just the process of coming here, that in itself requires resiliency. So, like, I've had folks that, just for example, like a gentleman who resides in Allentown, and the only employment that we could get him was out in Easton. And he made it work. Like, he woke up every morning at like 4 a.m. to get a ride to go to this job. And he would bike all the way to the bus station. Like, the biking was at least like a few hours. Like,
wow.
It's just a lot of them like make it work.
That's something that I've noticed with even friends of mine that have family from other countries or their first generation here in America. Like, their work ethic and their ability to
unmatched
just figure it out and make it work, you know, because they see that long-term goal of what they're trying to do here, and that just the effort it took for them to get here, like, it's like they'll do whatever it takes.
No, they are they're honestly like the most hardworking people like I've ever met, so it's always a pleasure working with them. So
that's incredible. Sure, you've seen so many different stories of people's backgrounds, trials, tribulations, but then the kind of the come up, if you will, as they start to get their feet here. And I imagine that's what drives you to do what you do in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good, obviously, like, seeing like the success stories, but in the same way, just because these folks are resilient doesn't mean that we should expect them to just kind of take on everything in life and be and like continue being resilient. So for example, like, you know, just because they were resilient in the process of coming here doesn't mean that we should expect them to be resilient in every other hurdle that they face while they're here. And so a lot of them, you know, just from that process alone of coming, it's a really traumatic process. And them being here and possibly being homeless or anything, that's traumatic in itself as well. So then you kind of put on top of that they're undocumented, and then they can't get that mental health care for their PTSD that they have. So it's really, they're going through a lot.
Yeah, so. Yeah, for sure. I mean, speaking of a lot, it sounds like Mira in it of itself is a lot, but at the same time, you have a day job that you execute and are a big role within the Keegalgan Lifehouse, right? So
yeah.
What is that organization, and what role do you play there?
So at Keegalgan, we work with struggling moms and babies. So we have two departments. So there's the residential department where moms and babies can live, and they can be in that program up until babies two. And then we have the outreach department, which is kind of serves as like a pantry for mom and baby.
Okay.
And that's up until the baby's one.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So that, I mean, there's a lot to dig into there. And we're going to dig in a little bit more on the Keegalgan Lifehouse and your experience there as we come back. We're going to take a short break here. This is Lewis Holzman with Young Valley Leaders here with Clarice Staupe, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all the programming you hear possible. Becoming a WDIY member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure WDIY will be here for the next person in our community to discover. Make your membership gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 4 or wdiy.org. We couldn't be here without you.
All right, and we're back. Lewis Holzman here with Young Valley Leaders, here with Clarice Staupe, and we're talking about the community. We're talking about nonprofits. We're talking about social services. We're talking about people finding the valley, frankly, finding America, and figuring out how to find the right resources to survive, to get work, But then we're also talking about some of the mothers and the babies that really need some support and really have other resources here in the Valley that help provide that support that Clarice plays a pretty heavy hand in. So you gave us a little bit about what the organization is at a high level, but what are you doing on your day-to-day to help support the mothers, to help support the babies and get them the resources that they need?
So, like I mentioned, there's two different departments. So I run the outreach department, and that, again, is like a pantry essentially with just different basic needs for mom and baby. And there is, honestly, it's funny because there's so much crossover between Mira and Kay, because there are so many migrant immigrant moms, refugee moms who are out here that need that exact resource. So there is just so much correlation. So it's great. I get to do both.
Yes. Yeah, so it's, I mean, you mentioned Mira starting with like community-based partnerships, and Kay is just one of those partnerships, I imagine.
Yeah.
You know, so you have a lot more outside of Kay within Mira, but something that you can really work closely and dearly with to help push that forward. What made you want to work with Kay in that specific niche area of a community that certainly needs help? I mean, you could have chose so many different things. I know you have some background in other organizations, but what took you to this direction?
So Mira has worked with Kay for quite a few years now. So I was familiar with the organization, and the women that work there are just incredible. And the moms that, you know, in working with the community, when you refer someone somewhere, and it ends up just having such a big impact on that person, you know, like the kind of work that's being done in that organization. And so every mom we've sent through Kay has just always come out better than they have gone in. And so, you know, the director had let some people know that she was hiring, and I found out about it.
Cool.
And one thing led to another. And yeah.
Nice. So just, you know, kind of being in the networks, already doing a lot of the work with the sweat equity of Mira, and just knowing the people kind of led you to that journey. You mentioned partnerships and other organizations. You want to just shout out some of the organizations that you're working with, or, and it could be with Kay, it could be with Mira, but I mean, it doesn't have to be an all-inclusive list, but what other organizations are near and dear to you?
Oh, there's so many. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's like the Lehigh Valley, we are just like a pot full of organizations. Like, we just have so many nonprofits and different organizations that work in the community here. It's incredible. Like, when people come outside from different areas and come to Lehigh Valley and they see how many organizations we have that work with the community, they're always impressed. So we really just have so many. It really depends on what I'm working.
No pressure.
I mean, so for the migrant folks that we work with, when they're needing that educational help, we work a lot with PA Migrant Education. They're a great program, and I may be a little favored because I used to work for them. So that's where I used to teach. So that's where I used to teach. Also, we get a lot of our refugee families that are seeking help. We get them through the Refugee Resettlement Agency. So our resettlement agency is actually located in Allentown. And so they're run under Bethany Christian Services. And so they work a lot with us as well. There's really just so many organizations. My husband runs the food pantry over at New Bethany, and we work heavily with New Bethany just on several different aspects, whether it be clothing, food, housing for the folks, just so many different things. So there's, I really could just go on and on. So.
That's why we're here. Take the time that you'd like. So lots of things happening. I imagine you're out at the different events all the time. You're running around to different organizations and groups and partnerships, or maybe even with people and with their families to their homes, food banks, shelters, housing, clothes. How do you balance work, family, and keeping some time for yourself?
That's a great question. No, really kind of like finding that balance was honestly really difficult for me for a while to figure it out. And I think really it was just learning to have grace with myself. I feel like we hold ourselves so accountable and like to such high levels of expectation, and really just kind of remembering, like, at the end of the day, like, whoever you are, you know, whether you work for an organization or you run an organization, you're doing so much in that day. And you know, like, you need to also have grace for yourself. Like, at the end of the day, you're still just someone. You're still just someone's, you know, wife, daughter, mother. And, yeah, just that grace is really important to have with yourself that, hey, if I didn't get through this wait list today, like, the world's not going to blow up.
Yeah, that's important because you can only – you run so hard, but if you run yourself into the ground, then you can't help and serve not even just the people around you, but certainly yourself turns into – sickness or just being run down or whatever it might be. So that's a good thing to keep front center. How about, I'm going to talk about fun things in the Valley. You got anything to talk about there?
No, I do. What's that thing that is in Allentown, that gallery thing?
I don't know. There's a lot of galleries. There's the art museum. There's the Soft Machine Gallery.
That one. That's so cool.
On Ridge Avenue, downtown. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they run a nice shop over there, and they're great people. It's great to support artists and some of the local artists and gallery owners. You find yourself there with some music from time to time.
I love it. I love the Soft Machine Gallery. They have like so many different like new different music options. It's just a really nice like hole in the wall place because not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, no, shout out Soft Machine Gallery.
So right. Sure.
That hasn't been brought up on the show thus far, so that's a great thing to pull forward. Yeah. How about food? You do food anywhere specifically?
So I'm such a foodie. It's so bad. Okay. My husband is like, we need to stop eating everywhere. I would say like one of my favorite restaurants right now is Ayat. It's Middle Eastern food, It's over in Allentown.
Palestinian, I think, right? It's an origination.
Oh,
it's
so good.
I was actually just there for the first time 2 weeks ago, and it slapped.
Yeah, no, it really does. They're hummus. Yeah, they're really good.
Nice. Yeah, definitely Ayat. That's on 13th and Tillman in Allentown, A-Y-A-T. Yeah, so if you haven't checked that out, go check it out. Bringing it back in center here to, being a leader and being a Young Valley leader here, what does that mean to you? Maybe you don't look at yourself as a leader. Maybe you do. I have no idea. But I certainly look at you as one, not only from a founding standpoint with your nonprofit, but just the way you're able to lead the charge for literally thousands of people on a yearly basis to help them, in their lives. So, what does that mean to you and how you're able to bring that forward for people?
I honestly, am shocked every day that I even decided to start Mira. But I don't know. I love it so much. I think that, anyone who's working in any type of mission, whatever that mission is, the only thing I would say is just keep whatever that mission is, really close to your heart and just don't let anything change it. Don't let funding affect it. Don't let, other people's ideas and, just that mission is close to you for a reason. So
I love that. That's very genuine. Sheesh. Whew.
Are you gonna cry?
I don't know. I'm holding it back right now. No, but on a serious level, how can people find you or follow you or get in touch, whether it's you personally, whether it's Mira, whether it's Kay, some of those organizations. So, give yourself some plugs.
Yeah, no, definitely. So if any moms and babies out there that need help, so over at Kay, my email is, so it's Clarice, so it's Clarice at kgalganlifehouse.org. And then Mira, if you just look up Mira on Google, it's MIRA resources. We will pop right up and, all of the direct contact information on there is to me. So, but yeah, that's for any migrants and immigrants and refugees that need that help.
Awesome. There's definitely some great resources out there. And please, please share. If you're listening to this and you know someone that maybe this sparks a thought of that could use some of these resources, whether it's mom and baby or, otherwise. As we get towards the end of our segment here, any advice, final comments, words of strength and encouragement for our upcoming leaders that are listening in?
I'm just so grateful that I'm able to be on any type of shows like this and to raise awareness for, that mission that holds so near and dear to my heart. So anyone out there that has a mission that is really close to them, if you just, all you really have to do is just take that one step forward and really everything will just kind of come on after that. And, who knows, you'll be on a show like this.
take a step forward and put it into action, says Clarice. You have a mission that's close to heart. You're only one step away from actually putting it into reality and making an impact on people. And thank you again for everything that you've done and continue to do here in the Valley for those thousands of people in a variety of different ways, Clarice. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that does about it here for episode 8 of Young Valley Leaders. Here in the books, big thank you again, Clarice, for coming out and taking the time, bringing valuable insight into the world of community, nonprofits, and different social services. It's really been a pleasure having you on the show. We certainly do welcome any comments or questions from our listeners. You can find this airing live monthly on WDIY 88.1 FM on the second Monday of each month at 6:30 p.m. and forever streaming with all of the other episodes on WDIY.org, along with Spotify, Apple Podcast, and WDIY's YouTube and other social media channels, and I believe also NPR. Lastly, I'd be remiss without saying a big shout out to some people making this program possible. Lauren Matthews with an awesome logo, bringing the Young Valley Leaders brand to life. Matt Cajun live and in studio with us today, behind the camera, making this interview come to life on screen. And then, of course, James, Seamus, and all the good folks here at WDIY for giving us the time, the space to bring this show alive, and for supporting efforts to disseminate across the website, YouTube, social media, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR, and all that fun jazz where you can find this indefinitely. Again, I'm Lewis Holzman, your host of Young Valley Leaders on WDIY 88.1, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and until next month.
If you enjoyed this program, you can hear this episode and more, along with our other public affairs programming at WDIY.org, on WDIY's free mobile app, on your favorite podcast platform, or live weekdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here on WDIY.